Hey, welcome back, everybody. So, there is so much coverage in the world right now about COVID-19, but equally as much about restaurants, I feel like. Probably because we're in this right now and we're together and this is our life. And so much local support and so much talking about restaurants and how to save them and how to build them and what they're going through and what our staff is going through. But there is a completely different sector of food service that's not being talked about, or at least I'm not hearing much about it. Assisted living facilities, high-risk environments, places like nursing homes, retirement homes, where your residence and as an operator, your main job, especially through something like this, is to keep these people safe, alive, and healthy. Crazy, right? I mean, imagine thinking of what we're going through right now, and it's, you know, I got to get my people fed, I got to get revenues in, I got to keep my staff employed. That's it. I mean, that's really our biggest things is stay safe, try and get your bills paid, and try and keep your staff. These guys are going through something completely different. Every step they take, every decision they make affects the life, possibly, of their residents. And it's incredible. I mean, what they're doing to make changes. So today we're talking to Thomas Kim. Thomas is an amazing guy, awesome chef, ran some great restaurants in the past. Just recently moved to the healthcare sector. He's running an assisted living facility. Thomas has some really awesome insight. And I love talking to Thomas because he has the restaurant background, but now he's in this situation where his whole focus is keeping people safe. So Thomas and his team, I mean, they're killing it there, right? They're doing everything they can to keep their residents safe and comfortable and happy. It's incredible. And I think that there's a lot to be pulled from this. So listen up and pay attention, because there's going to be a lot of great information that I think that we're going to apply in the near future to everything we're doing. So check it out. Listen to what Thomas said. I love talking to the guy. He had such a great attitude, such great insight. Let's hear from him. Let's hear what he has to say, and we'll get to it. So I'm Michael Ponzio, and welcome to Kitchen Coalition. So again, we're talking to assisted living facilities, healthcare, that whole sector right now. We're talking with Thomas Kim. You're going to get to meet him. Thomas is going to tell us all about what he's going through, how they're adjusting, what they're doing to make their residents and keep their residents safe. It's really interesting stuff. I think you're going to really enjoy this. So let's start hearing from Thomas. Thomas, welcome. I want to hear all about this.
Since the last time, I think that I've been involved with Smithfield, I had my own restaurant. We have since sold that. So we sold it about a month after it started to really hit. So thankfully, we were able to kind of move away from being a small business owner. And I actually moved into healthcare of all things. So I'm actually a culinary service director for an assisted living facility. So we I'm part of an organization that is right in the thick of it. I'm the location that I'm in is in Redmond, Washington. So it is it was the epicenter for the U.S. for a little bit. Obviously New York is now kind of taking over that, but, the things that we're dealing with on a kind of a regular basis is pretty crazy. So we are a company wide, we've actually decided to, put everything on a complete lockdown. So we're not allowing any outside visitors. Vendors aren't able to come into the building. We are, kind of self quarantining everything at this point. To the degree where, you know, we're testing everybody that before they come in, we're making sure that all of the residents are kept at a safe distance from everyone. There's no visitors allowed. The food that's being cooked for them is being prepared by a very small staff at this point. We're doing everything that we can to really protect all of the people that rely on us. So right now our facility has 43 residents. And so with myself, I have two other cooks, and we do that for 7 days a week, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I mean, you think about this, every single thing these people eat is prepared there. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And he and this small skeleton crew are working overtime to get this done. You know, in times when people are out of work right now and working less or trying to trim up services, they have to keep the same services because these are the only services that their people have. That's pretty intense. So as they're going through and they're taking care of their customers and they're making sure their residents are safe, they have to feed them three times a day. They have to make sure their vendors don't have anyone coming in the building. Their vendors can't come in. The people's family members can't come in. It's so tightly monitored and managed that it's really the only way that they can keep these people safe.
Yeah, it can get real thin real quickly, especially if somebody, you know, isn't able to work or something happens. You know, we've kind of had to learn to roll with the punches at this point. You know, typically we have two other part-time cooks, but then because of the situation, we've had to keep them away because they work at other facilities that we aren't comfortable letting them come into ours.
So they're doing complete isolation of their staff. They can't even work in other places. They have to do everything possible to keep their residents safe, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So let's hear about what kind of changes they made and what kind of adaptations they did to their services in order to make this a possibility, because that's a really big change.
Yeah, so we have a big dining hall where everyone would come in and socialize and come and eat their dinner or breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We've actually shut that down. So everyone has their meals inside of their own apartment. So we're basically doing essentially delivery, food delivery. And we also have, so we're an assisted living, but we also do memory care, which is essentially people that have any type of situation such as like Alzheimer's or dementia. And so they are particularly vulnerable. And so we've actually quarantined them within the quarantine of the building. So they're actually not able to leave the area that they are in, specifically because we need to make sure that we are ensuring their safety at all times. So getting food to them is real, real tricky. So we're doing, everything is disposable. Everything has to be sanitized and sterilized before we use it. And then it's all delivered through kind of like a hot box system, but we can only have one contact per shift. So that means that one person is like packing the food, taking the food, and dropping off the food. So it gets real tricky real fast. So before we would have two cooks plus an expediter, and then we'd also have service staff. So, you know, it kind of went from like, essentially what you would find in like a resort or like a small restaurant. And then now we're operating in almost like kind of a factory setting where we're really just trying to do production line, plating, everything is in disposables, you know, and we're making sure that we minimize contact. So everyone that's cooking the food, we have to make sure that they're all quarantined, that they're all kind of abiding by the safety regulations and stuff like that. You know, and then we got the full PPE stuff, and it's pretty crazy.
You know, all these adjustments, they're awesome, but you think about it, one contact person and running a smaller staff, which means probably a good amount of overtime, switching completely to disposables. These are all things that are going to affect the cost of doing business and raise their costs. Let's hear a little bit about how much it's actually changing things and how it's impacting their financial situation, because it's an important thing to start thinking about, because down the line, that's going to affect our pricing. It's going to affect how we make money. It's going to affect what we do, what we deliver to the customers. So let's hear about their impact on their cost of doing business.
Yeah, you know, I mean, cost wise, you know, the residents, obviously they're paying to be protected and be serviced, and so it's kind of part of the business that we're in. But definitely, the supply part is a big issue. You know, so being able to work with any of these like big box vendors like US Foods or Sysco, and trying to get disposables, which normally wouldn't be an issue, but right. You know, like, yeah, we're having to haggle over, like, can I at least get a half box of forks, kind of, you know? So it's crazy. Like today I put in an order for just kind of the clamshell disposable boxes and two cases of forks, like 2,000 forks. And they told me that they're going to give me 1,000 forks and then half of the disposable clamshells. Yeah, it's definitely a weird pick and choose, and it gets strange. Because I mean, you know, even the company that I work for has a pretty big footprint within the West Coast community, and even for us, we're struggling to be able to get the supplies that we need.
So this is interesting and a really common problem happening right now. Our costs are increasing. We have to spend more money to keep everyone safe. But on the other hand, the supplies aren't there. I can't find sanitizer to save my life for sanitation wipes. I can't find hand sanitizer. I can't find certain chemicals and things I need to clean properly. How am I supposed to do my business? And it's going to cost more money. This whole industry is shifting. And this whole our whole reality of restaurants is changing right now. And Thomas got into a little bit coming up next of what is changing for them and what he kind of sees the future coming to. It's very interesting what he points out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that one of the biggest things that's going to come out of all of this is everyone is going to realize a lot of the holes that they didn't think that they had. Just the multiple touch points, you know, how many areas where we can make improvements in terms of sanitation, making sure that everything that we're doing and touching, that we're adhering to the strictest of protocols for not only health, but also for safety. These are all things that we take for granted, I think, overall, when everyone's healthy and the community is safe. But then as soon as something changes, you realize all of the weak links. And so I think that moving forward, a lot of people, especially, you know, people that deal with vulnerable communities, is going to have to make some serious changes and look at some of their protocols. I know that we are definitely already actively working towards that as soon as this is over, what steps we can take to ensure that we are at the very forefront of making sure our residents are safe.
So it's crazy. The whole thing is changing. I mean, let's face it. Let's remember when we were coming up as cooks. You know, you'd be working at some fancy restaurant and making it kind of great and doing what you have to do and looking at the different things. And you're looking at these big chains. And it's like you have to use cut gloves when you're doing this, and you have to follow this procedure for that, and the temperature logs and all these crazy things. A lot of those have already worked their way into our lives as the norms because we do want to be safe and we want to be responsible. But thinking of what's coming in the future, there's going to be a lot of new regulations coming out and a lot of things changing. And it kind of makes me laugh a little because you look at these big giant chain companies who are doing all these things and you're like, huh, maybe they were onto something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, you know, it's so much like, so my background is sushi, and there was like this weird period where it was off and on where the Los Angeles County health was basically saying anyone that deals with sushi has to wear gloves, disposable one-use gloves, and you know, it was like just this immediate backlash from all of the people that did sushi, basically saying like, you know, it kind of destroys the essence of what that culture is. And to a degree, I feel that way. But at the same time, now being on this side of it, being on this side of the industry where I'm dealing with vulnerable communities, I can see the importance of those, you know, single use gloves and stuff like that. So it's a weird, I feel like it's a weird balance that at some point we're going to have to face and deal with as a, as an industry. To how far we push it will is to be seen, but, yeah, definitely. I think that up until now, a lot of the restaurant industry has dealt with issues, such as sanitation and safety from a point of, liability. You know, we've always looked at it as like, okay, I just don't want to get in trouble. So what do I need to do? But I think moving forward, I think if we want to be proactive and make sure that we are keeping people safe rather than not getting sued, is going to change how we approach sanitation and food handling.
So before we continue on, you might have noticed that pretty little logo on Thomas's jacket. this show is brought to you by Smithfield Foods. Smithfield is the largest pork producer in the world. Amazing company. They have this whole branch called Smithfield Culinary. Thomas is actually one of the chef advisors that sits on the chef advisory board for this company. So Smithfield Culinary and Smithfield Foods has this whole program where they work with chefs and different people to bring in new ideas and innovations, find out what tools we need to be successful, and then they give them to us. If you've ever been on their website, www.smithfieldculinary.com, check it out. Fantastic stuff. I mean, everything from data central things to recipes to innovations. Complete information that any chef, operator, or home foodie can use. Wonderful, amazing, love Smithfield, great company. Check out their website again, www.smithfieldculinary.com. You're going to love it.
Yeah, I mean, so we've actually already proactively removed seats. So we've taken a lot of the dining tables out. We've taken a lot of the sofas out. We've pretty much started staging all of the common areas so that you're forced to be 6 feet away. So the ramp up to it, you know, just even when we first started to see this as a concern, we were already kind of thinking like, okay, well, what's our game plan and how are we going to distance everybody? And then as soon as it became a thing, we were like, okay, well, we got to take away these tables. But logistically it becomes a nightmare because, you know, you just turns into this thing where it's like, okay, well, I can put them back to back, but then how do I deal with, you know, somebody on the front of the table? And, you know, it just turns into this whole thing. And it's something that I think for a lot of restaurants, you know, you always have the idea of like, okay, how do I maximize my seating? You know, and now you're thinking, okay, well, how do I minimize that? And, you know, for the bottom line, it just doesn't work out because when you open versus where you are now, you know, trying to cut your seating in half is going to obviously affect how much you need to be able to turn and burn. You know, so it becomes this really weird math that you have to do. And I don't envy anyone that has to deal with the 25 to 60 seat restaurants right now, because that's going to be insane.
So that's a really interesting point and something to think about in the future, because are we as restaurants going to have to start to minimize seating and spread people out? What's that going to do to our bottom line? I mean, if I have a 100-seat restaurant and I budget and planned everything for a 100-seat restaurant and I pay rent for a 100-seat restaurant, 50 seats isn't going to cut it. So I don't really know what that can kind of change to in the future. Knowing that and seeing that, you know, we're going to see a difference in our customers as well, because as a customer, you know, a consumer, there's something fun about being in a place that's jam-packed and busy and you're all on top of each other and everyone's running around like crazy. I mean, that's a great feeling. But with these changes and all these things, you know, if you're coming to a deli that you love and now you go up there and it's very sterile and everyone back there is wearing masks and changing their gloves every single time, you lose that sense of hospitality and that comfort and that feeling of, you know, kind of being somewhere where you belong and you're welcomed. So I'm curious to see how his residents feel with all these changes, because this is their home and all these changes are happening where they live. I'm interested to hear about this.
I think for the most part, we're still just a few weeks in. And so most of the residents are still having a little bit of fear about what could happen. And so because of that, I think that they appreciate the safety measures we're doing. my bigger concern is going to be when, you know, all the news media says, hey, we did it, we're over that hump and everything is safe now, how everybody's going to start feeling, you know, like, I mean, you know, and I hope that, you know, it's a unified message in terms of how we deliver that, you know, kind of throughout the country and throughout the world. But the residents right now, I think they recognize the fact that they are vulnerable and they don't want to be sick. They appreciate the measures that we take, but it is pretty strict. It's a little bit crazy because, you know, we can't even allow their kids to visit, you know. So there's I mean, one of our for a personal story is one of our residents, she stays inside the residence, but her husband actually stays with the kids, and so the husband visits on a regular basis. So he comes in every day at 2 o'clock, and ever since we put the quarantine on, he hasn't been able to come in. And so he actually just drives up, just sits in the car, and then we bring her to the window. They look at each other, and then he goes home. And it's really, really crazy to have to deal with it in that way, because at any given moment, you know, any of these residents could pass, and they, I think they recognize that. And so it's always weird trying to justify extending time while also minimizing contact, you know. So it's like, what are you living for? It's, oh, I want to have time to be with my family, but then we're minimizing that contact with your family, you know. So it's a real weird balance.
I mean, thinking outside of our customers, this is pretty nerve-wracking for us too. I know I'm nervous going into work every single day. I mean, once I'm at work, I feel fine because I trust, you know, anyone that I'm with, and I know that my environment is sterile and clean. But you can catch it from anything, bringing it out, something out to a car, or taking in a delivery from a driver. It's terrifying. It's crazy to think about the steps you have to take. I know when I go to the parking lot, I put on a mask. I wear gloves. When I press elevator buttons, I wear gloves. It is terrifying. I mean, there's no other way to say it. And hearing that the steps and the way that they're responding for their residents is incredible. But let's hear a little bit more. I want to know, you know, what kind of advice or anything that's working for him that maybe we could take from and get a little bit of inspiration from, because I think Thomas has some amazing insight and this has been really awesome so far.
I mean, I think overall, for the most part, the strongest pivot that everyone's done in food service has been that everyone's recognized the importance of providing food in the safest possible way with minimal contact, which has been obviously things like delivery and disposables, making sure that is kind of the one use. Anything that's one use has become real big. And so I think that is something that even for my industry, or actually for my section of the food industry, or even, you know, for a mom and pop restaurant, delivery and kind of being able to provide food with minimal contact is the biggest key right now. We haven't delved into that just yet, you know, in terms of trying to figure out new revenue streams. I think that for right now, our biggest priority is just making sure that everyone stays healthy. But, you know, I think that for us, you know, our biggest thing is keeping everyone insulated and safe.
Right.
Whereas, you know, small businesses and other restaurants, what they're looking to do is how can we reach as many people as possible from a really, really small footprint. And so, you know, I mean, obviously there's some restaurants that try to pivot into becoming grocery stores and doing, you know, doing things like that. And, you know, that got shut down real quick. And so it's one of those things where I think through desperate measures, people are going to get real, real creative. So I imagine that on the back end of all of this, food service is going to look really interesting, because we're going to see much like how much things changed when food trucks came on the scene and how big that became, and how even brick and mortar they pivoted to a company or it's kind of become part of that that language. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens from here once everyone kind of comes out on the other end of it, what people are going to do to, you know, kind of address. Obviously, people are taking on a lot of debt and people are taking on loans to just get by. What they're going to do to answer that, you know, and what they're going to do to, you know, kind of take care of those issues.
So it's pretty crazy. I mean, we were on such an upward trend with restaurants. Restaurant scenes in general, especially here in Chicago, but across the country, have been just at an all-time high. I mean, it's been incredible. You could go to places and get some of the best of the best of the best food because we can learn. We have the resources right now. We have the way to communicate. We can get inspired from each other by social media. Way different. It's going to be interesting to see now where, you know, how it comes back. And I think that there's a lot of changes that are going to happen and going to happen. But there's going to be, unfortunately, a lot of places closing. Not necessarily a good thing. We want to make sure that we're supporting each other as best as possible. But the reality is there's only going to be so many customers after this because people are going to be afraid to come out. And those that the other thing is people are at home learning how to cook right now. You know, it's funny. We didn't realize how few people knew how to actually cook until they were actually forced to cook. And I think that this whole shift of people becoming more self-reliant and not needing the restaurants and finding new ways to entertain themselves, because I can tell you, my wife and I, our best times are when we go to restaurants. I mean, that's fun for us. That's our night out. You know, that's our show to go with our dinner. And I think that people now are going to start changing and they've found other ways to be entertained. But it's definitely going in a completely different direction. I think it's going to take a very long time to get back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, obviously, you know, restaurants and real estate is tied together so tightly. It, you know, once a lot of the vacancies and empty storefronts kind of come open, I think a lot of landlords are going to get really creative with how to fill those spaces. And then a lot of, you know, restaurateurs are going to get real creative. And so I think that there is a really strong opportunity for there to be a really great resurgence later. But we're going to have a tough time for a few years at least, just trying to figure out the aftermath of all of this.
Now, this is a prime example of an operation where they are trying to monitor their costs now too, but give quality, where they're going to start exploring some options such as digging a little more into the prefab sector of items, you know, finding something that's already cooked, already prepared. And I know as chefs, you know, so many times we're like, hey, no, I'm going to make everything from scratch, every single thing from scratch. But I think coming down the pipeline, it's going to very much be a pick your battles kind of situation. And, you know, this operation, they, if they go with more prefab items, they're going to have more opportunities to minimize contact, keep their residents safe, and control their costs. And honestly, their quality, because they'll be able to decide. I mean, there's such a broad array of options out there of prefabricated items. And while I'm very much a from-scratch person, I also understand and see the value in this other side of it. Because, I mean, as operators, we're going to have to really think about, you know, how can I do this? How can I put this on the menu when I have less staff and I have less customers? I mean, I need to still be profitable, but I have the exact same fixed costs. My rent, things like that, my taxes. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that. So this is really interesting stuff. I'm curious to hear Thomas's take on their stance on prefab items and how they use them.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I use quite a bit of Smithfield products. You know, so I use like Farmland Breakfast Links. I use Smithfield Bacon. I'm using a lot of those products because of the fact that it does. Yeah. It minimizes any type of possible contamination. And also more importantly, you know, it kind of minimizes that danger zone in terms of making sure that it's cooked, you know, so we are utilizing more cooked, frozen and ready to serve products because we want to make sure that we are keeping that margin of error really small.
Yeah, yeah.
So, right. You know, it's so in that way, you know, a lot of those ready to eat, ready to serve products have been a blessing because it helps us to know that we are meeting a certain level of safety and quality. You know, in terms of a lot of the products that come out of the prefab and ready to serve, you know, Smithfield being one of them. But I mean, you know, it was a lot of companies. They were trying to figure out what was the cheapest method, you know, and how can I do it at the most cost-effective way, which everyone's still obviously bottom line is a big deal. But I think the diners got really savvy in terms of wanting more quality, wanting more flavor. And so because of that, I think the demand also kind of came from that side of the industry where they understood like, okay, well, if we're going to sell more product, we need to make it taste better. We need to make it better quality. And so, you know, in that way, you know, kind of we're in a really good position because we get to serve product that is consistent and safe, but also it, you know, obviously is, you know, it tastes good, you know, that, which is important.
You know what, I appreciate, you, you know, you kind of get my input on it and, no, that was, you know, I, it's always nice to be able to just kind of, talk through it a little bit and, you know, be able to figure out what we're going to do together as an industry.
What a great guy. And like, I mean, I love Thomas. He's just so easy to talk to. He's such an awesome person. You could tell he actually cares about the people he's serving and also cares about his craft and the business side of it. He's just really wonderful. He's very intuitive. He's got a lot of great information. That was a really great talk. I mean, going through and hearing about the situation of the resident, that heartbreaking story about the guy who has to sit out in the car and talk to, you know, and see his wife through the window. There's so many different layers of things going on and things that we don't really think about, because at our busiest point, we're in the grind of just make them smile, get them fed, get them to come back. And his point is making their lives better, you know, and making sure that they're safe. It's very special and it's a very different connection. And I really enjoyed talking to him about it. This was awesome. I mean, recapping on it, seeing, you know, the safety measures they're taking, the distancing of the tables, the single use utensils and things like that, the carry out packaging, this minimizing contact by having one person do one thing. Very, very insightful. I got a lot of great things from it. So this was a really awesome conversation. I'm so happy we had a chance to talk to Thomas today, hear about what they're doing, hear about what they're going through. I feel for you, brother. It's been a rough ride so far, and I know there's a way to go still, but we'll get through it, and you're a rock star, so thank you. Thank you, guys. If you like what you see, click subscribe, give us a like. Look forward to our next episode. We're going to be talking coming up soon about meal kits and other innovations, and we're going to talk to someone from hotels and clubs. Lots of great stuff coming out, so pay attention, look for it, subscribe. We'd love to see you here more. Take care.